Welcome to Govardhan Eco Village. This very beautiful, auspicious event is, in one sense, a fulfillment of the purpose of this small community to try to manifest a place of pilgrimage where devotees as well as the public could come and experience the spirit of true bhakti, which is most essentially manifested in Krishna's pastimes of Sri Vrindavan Dham. Srila Prabhupada often told us Vrindavan is not just a place, it is a state of consciousness. The place is a manifestation of the spiritual world. But we can't truly appreciate it unless we are in the state of consciousness of the residence of Vrindavan. We cannot imitate them and pretend to be gopas or gopis. We shouldn't pretend to be demons either. But we follow in their footsteps. And our great acharyas, especially Srila Prabhupada, taught us in a very practical, very real, genuine way how to follow in the footsteps, by putting Krishna in the center, by taking our false egos, our selfish propensities out of the center. By actually living according to the principles of bhakti. Nadanam na janam na sundarim kavitam vajagadisha kamaye. Mama Janmani Janmani Shwari Bhavatat Bhakti Rohaita Kitvai. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna in the mood of Sri Radha. Krishna is the object, the ultimate object of love for everyone in Vrindavan. And Srimati Radharani is the ultimate lover, the supreme lover of Krishna. In Vrindavan, everything and everyone revolves around pleasing Sri Sri Radha, Vrindavan Bihari. And Lord Chaitanya is that Srimati Radharani Krishna, who has come to teach us very practically through his teachings as well as through his life, and especially through his devotees' lives and through the relationships among the devotees, what it actually means to please Krishna and how. In this verse that was cited, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Shikshastakam tells the mood of bhakti. I do not want wealth, sensual pleasures of every variety. I do not want fame, prestige or power, great knowledge and followers. I do not even want liberation from suffering. I simply want to serve you, Krishna. I want to please you. According to your wish, if you want me to please you and serve you in the spiritual world, or if you want me to take birth after birth in this material world, I am yours. That is the standard aspiration that a devotee should always keep focused on. Because this material existence has endless ways of distracting us. Maya, Srila Prabhupada would sometimes translate as that which is not. In one sense, if we take all the different potencies that Maya has within this cosmic manifestation, it can all be summed up that that which we think is the goal of our lives is not the real goal. We think having a lot of money, a lot of followers, a lot of prestige, a lot of wealth, a lot of health, so many things we put as the goals of our life. In every moment, every day, we have so many goals. And of course, we have to, in a practical way, live within this world. But we should never, ever lose scope of what our real goal is. What everything else I'm doing is meant to bring us to realize. Prema Pumartha Mahan. That the true goal of life is to please Krishna. In the spiritual world, when Krishna performs his pastimes, it is simply loving leelas. In the material world, when Krishna performs his pastimes, even in Vrindavan, practically every day, some demon comes to disrupt everything. Agasura, Aristasura, Keshi, Putana, Trinavarta, Shakatasura, Kaliya, Vatsasura, Bakasura. So many. And these asuras were not just, you know, crooked politicians trying to, you know, block our permits. They were really, every single one of them was so strong and so evil. They could destroy the entire community of Vrindavan single-handedly. That was their power. Even Indra, who's a great devotee in Vrindavan Leela, even he becomes confused and tries to destroy everything. So in the material world, there will always be challenges. And one of the misconceptions that devotees may have is, when I take to Krishna consciousness, there won't be any challenges. But material world means challenges. Krishna consciousness means overcoming these challenges by putting Krishna in the center of our lives. Taking shelter of Krishna just doesn't mean Krishna save me. Taking shelter of Krishna means putting Krishna's will in place of my selfish motivations. That's what it actually means to take shelter. And in that spirit, we can actually cry out Krishna's names. The two most important scriptures that Lord Chaitanya taught us are the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, where the highest truths are revealed to us. And interestingly, both of these scriptures were spoken at a time of great challenge, at the beginning of the scripture was a great challenge, and at the end there was a challenge. The challenge didn't end, but how Krishna taught us, or how Shukadev Goswami taught us to deal with the challenge, is the real message that we have to learn to actually be Krishna conscious. Bhagavad Gita was spoken at a time when there was about to be a major battle, a world war. Arjuna was between two armies. He saw friends, relatives, gurus, well-wishers on both sides. It was dramatic. He didn't know what to do. He was crying. His complexion turned pale white. His limbs were trembling. He became so weakened by that experience, he couldn't even hold Gandiba bow, much to speak of fight with it. It fell from his hands. And he turned to Krishna. Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita. After Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita, it's not that it became a nice sunny day and both sides of the army shook hands and embraced each other and decided, yes, yes, let's put Krishna in the center. After Bhagavad Gita, there was a bigger challenge. There was the Mahabharata battle of Kurukshetra. So many challenges were there for Arjuna. But he applied the principles of Bhagavad Gita in those challenges. And even after the battle was done, so many other challenges. Srimad Bhagavatam, Parikshit, such a nice king. He loves everyone. He's a servant of everyone. He sees even the least among his subjects as Krishna's children. And he takes care of everyone with such care. Whether they're enlightened Brahmins, whether they're people working in the fields, whether they're animals or trees, he saw as his responsibility to Krishna to bring out the best in everyone. And he made a mistake that he didn't do on purpose, just due to circumstances. He acted out of his character and was cursed to die in 7 days. That's a crisis. He wasn't just detached, let me die. He wanted to take shelter of Krishna in such a way to teach the world that we need the association of devotees to really take shelter of Krishna. He was enlightened, he was a king, he was a Maharishi. But still, He was humble. I need the Vaishnavas. He went to the river Ganga. Could everyone hear? Does that mean yes or no? And all the great sages and all the great rishis, they saw the king and they were all completely dedicated to helping him. Who to speak? Vyasadev, Narada Muni, Vasishtha Muni, Vishwamitra Muni, Gautam Rishi, Parasara Muni, Parvat Muni. There was a lot of Munis and Rishis there. Some were already compilers of Vedas. Some were the gurus of Dhruva and Prahlad and the greatest Mahajans. Some were the gurus of Ramchandra and various incarnations of God. There could have been a serious dispute about who was going to speak. You see, the biggest problems in a devotional community is when leaders fight over territorial rights or prestige issues or anything like that. Because I'm qualified, I have accomplished this, I have so much experience. The tendency is cooperation means you should follow me. You're laughing, but please let that laugh bring the message closer to your heart. Because it's a reality that every one of us faces. Yes, Srila Prabhupada, our gurus, they are telling us if you want to show your love, you cooperate. Well, cooperate means you follow me. These great sages and rishis, they were extremely qualified, extremely experienced. They each had unbelievably qualified disciples. But there was no fighting. As soon as Shukadev Goswami came, they all decided, yes, he should speak. And we don't read about how some of the great souls left because they weren't chosen. They all had good reasons. Some of them were millions of years old. Shukadev Goswami was only 16 years old at the time. His guru was there. His param guru was there. The gurus of Ramchandra was there. But they were really eager to hear Shukadev Goswami. They were so happy he was going to speak. Parikshit offered his deepest obeisances and respect and gratitude to each and every one of them. And he asked these questions to Shukadev Goswami. What is the supreme dharma for all beings? What is the duty of a person about to die? Shukadev Goswami, in this moment of the most difficult crisis in people's lives, where they're about to die, he spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam. He spoke about the Pandavas. He spoke about Dhruva and Prahlad. He spoke about Ramchandra and Parasuram and Varaha Dev. He spoke about Matsya. He spoke about all the primary incarnations of the Lord and about great devotees. And each of these detailed descriptions of devotees was on a common subject, how they dealt with crisis. Why Sukadev Goswami didn't talk about great personalities who are just enjoying nice butterflies flapping in front of them and everybody's being so nice to them? That happens a lot. But he was speaking for the whole of humanity. Because Parikshit Maharaj was asking, what is the supreme dharma for all humanity? Not only what it is, but how to actually reach it. The Srimad Bhagavatam not only tells us what it is, but gives historical examples of how to reach it. Prahlad had challenges. Dhruva had challenges. The Pandavas had challenges. Hanuman had challenges. Everyone he talks about had challenges. Ranti Dev had challenges. And he culminates in the 10th canto. Story of Krishna's pastimes. But even there, a large proportion of his description of Krishna in Vrindavan, in Mathura, and in Dwarka were being attacked by challenges. He certainly tells about the beautiful loving exchanges between Krishna and his devotees, like the Rasa Leela and the playing of the games with the Gopas and Mother Yashoda's ecstatic love. But still, so many stories of being attacked and how the devotees responded. And in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, after describing all these things, Sukadev Goswami culminates the whole teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam in the 10th canto by ultimately describing Sri Radha's love for Krishna. And then as Sukadev Goswami is concluding, his last instructions really comes back to the basics. He took the Srimad Bhagavatam through these 10 cantos, or through these 12 cantos in such a way that it culminated in the ecstatic rasas of prema in Sri Vrindavan Dham. And then when he concludes, his last words are going back to the basis. You're not this body. You're the eternal soul, Maharaj Parikshit. And you shouldn't be disturbed by all of the things that happen in this world. You should always remain fixed that you're beyond birth and you're beyond death. You're a part of Krishna. So Sukadev Goswami takes us from the basics to the highest culminations of spiritual perfection and then concludes by bringing it back to the basis again. Because he wanted to emphasize, unless we really understand those basics, we We can't artificially think that we can enter into these higher experiences of pure bhakti. Then he asks Parikshit Maharaj, is there anything else you would like to hear from me? Parikshit Maharaj, with such gratitude, says, I've heard the Srimad Bhagavatam from you. I understand the goal of life. I'm not this body. I'm the eternal soul. I'm beyond birth. I'm beyond death. And my only true shelter is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And I've taken shelter of him by your grace. And I no longer have any fear of Takshaka, this snake bird, or anyone else. I have no fear of death anymore, because you have given me a taste of devotional service to Bhagavan Sri Krishna. So the only thing Parikshit Maharaj asked of Sukadev Goswami, because Sukadev Goswami asked, what else would you like? Any more questions? The only question he had left was, please bless me. Bless me that my body and my mind can be completely fixed in taking shelter of Krishna now and forevermore. Sukadev Goswami blessed him that his desire would be fulfilled. The Bhagavad Gita concludes, Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja Aham Vam Sarva Papibhyo Mokshai Shamima Sucha. Abandon all varieties of dharma and go to the essence. Sharanagati, to surrender to Krishna. Surrender means, Krishna, I'm yours. Manaso deho geho jo kichu. My body, my mind, my words, my home, my wealth, my abilities, my intelligence, everything is yours, Krishna. If you want to kill me, if you want to protect me, that's for you to decide. I'm yours. I'm your servant. Manmana bhavamat bhakto madhyat. Krishna tells, this is surrender, to always think of me. In all situations, what is our priority? To be Krishna's devotee, to worship him and offer homage unto him. In sunny days and stormy days, when we're glorified, when we're criticized, when we're in health, when we're in disease, when we're successful, when we fail, when things are going my way, when everything's going wrong, apparently. Whatever the situation, man mana bhavamat bhakto, we remember Krishna. We're his devotee, trying to please him and serve him. We worship him and offer our homage to him. Tateinu kampam susamikshamano. Offering homage to Krishna is explained in this beautiful verse by Lord Brahma. Even when things put us in a suffering condition, we offer our gratitude to Krishna and take shelter of Krishna. Parikshit Maharaj didn't ask for a couple more days and to live. He just asked, please bless me. This was his last question. Please bless me. That my body, my mind, my words, my soul, everything can take shelter of Krishna. And Shukadev Goswami gave that blessing. And then Sukadev Goswami left. Parikshit Maharaj offered his gratitude. And after Shukadev Goswami left, Takshaka, the snake bird, he came just after. It was all orchestrated as a great plan. Shukadev Goswami ended in time, which is something I usually never do. He ended his class in time, just in time for Takshaka to come, 7 days. And Takshaka didn't come as a snake bird. He had mystic powers. He actually took the form of a Brahmin. Shukadev Goswami told Parikshit Maharaj, when Takshaka comes and bites your foot, you will not die. It's just this body made out of the five material elements. You're the eternal soul. He gave the example of the air in the pot. The air within the pot, when it's broke, when the pot is broken, the air is still the same. So similarly, when this body dies, if we're Krishna conscious, we are part and parcel of Krishna, the eternal soul, simply enters into Krishna's loving service forever. If we're Krishna conscious. So Takshaka took the form of a Brahmin and just walked up and bit Maharaj Parikshit. And Maharaj Parikshit hardly even noticed it. He was so absorbed in Krishna. He was so totally absorbed in Krishna with such a grateful heart. He was beyond material existence. And suddenly, his whole body erupted in fire, massive fire. And instantly, the fire consumed his physical body. And everyone was horrified. All the sages and the rishis and the yogis and the saints and the Vaishnavas and the demigods were all watching this whole scene. It was painful. Such a great soul was leaving. But then they all started playing kettle drums and singing and dancing because they understood, yes, it's painful, he left us. But he attained the ultimate perfection of life. He has gone back home, back to Godhead. Parikshit's son, he was very angry. He performed a yajna to kill every snake in the world. And he had Brahmins chanting mantras. And all these thousands of snakes from everywhere were being drawn into this fire and burned to ashes. But Parikshit's son, who was young, sometimes young people have a lot of enthusiasm. And they have their ways of getting things done. But he asked the Brahmins, where's Takshaka? Takshaka's not coming. He's the worst of all the snakes. It's all because of him that I'm killing everybody else. Why he's not here? And what happened is, Takshaka saw what was going on, so he took shelter of Indra. And Indra was protecting him. When this came to the attention of Janamajaya, the son of Parikshit Maharaj, he told the Brahmins, chant the mantra for Takshaka and Indra, his protector. to all burn in this sacred fire. So they chanted the mantra, and now Indra, with the power of Brahmins, is more than the demigods. He was going to be burned to ashes, and he was helpless. There was nothing he could do. Indra, the king of heaven, the highest kshatriya within the universe, he had to take shelter of his guru, Brihaspati. He couldn't fight it himself. He said, Brihaspati, please help me. However learned we are, however wealthy we are, however opulent we are, however powerful we are, even if we're Indra, there will undoubtedly be experiences beyond our control. And we learn here, he took shelter of his guru. So Brihaspati came down and spoke to the son of Parikshit and said, actually, whatever's happening is not due to, whatever difficulties come in our lives, it's not due to other people. It's due to our own karma. It's either due to the reactions of our own previous acts and words, or it's Krishna intervening. So we shouldn't blame people. Somebody may be coming as an instrument of Krishna to really test your false ego. Or somebody may be coming to do the same thing just as a messenger of your own karma. So why should we blame others? You don't have to kill Indra. You don't have to kill all these snakes. Ultimately, your father went back home, back to Godhead by Krishna's arrangement. Don't blame others. You've already killed so many snakes. But those who were already killed, it must have been their karma too. But you shouldn't be the instrument of causing harm to others. This is an important point, because we have that tendency, justifying. We're supposed to ourselves feel that whatever inconveniences or challenges or problem are coming, don't blame others. It's either my karma, my destiny, or it's Krishna working through them. That's the way we have to feel if we want to be Krishna conscious. One of the most commonly, profusely quoted verses of Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas. When difficulties, challenges, sufferings come, whatever they may be, we bow to Krishna, knowing that these difficulties have come to help me. But as is often said, devotees' tendency, because Maya is always trying to divert us from the essence. We want to think very selective about which difficulties are good for me. But if you like these kind of difficulties, that means they're not really difficulties at all. Difficulties mean what I really don't like. Yes? And that's how Krishna helps us. Yes, yahama nagrinami harasheta dhanam shanai. When Krishna shows his greatest compassion, he takes everything away, so we have nothing but him. Now that doesn't just mean money. That doesn't just mean, because part of that verse, he not only takes everything away, but he turns everyone against you. That's a part of the verse that sometimes we very pleasingly forget. Even those in the renounced order of life, sannyasis, brahmacharis, we like to talk about the other part, how Krishna takes everything away. Yes, I don't have anything. But then the next part, he even turns people against you. It's very difficult. But that's Krishna's mercy. How do we handle it? So, Brihaspati, he told Parikshit Maharaja's son that don't try to get revenge on these snakes and Indra. It's all just meant to be. Now, we could be thinking, if Brihaspati didn't intervene, there would be no snakes in Govardhan Eco Village. Or anywhere else. Because snakes are like symbols of death, that they can strike at any time. Yes? So, Srimad Bhagavatam teaches it was on the verge of no more snakes in the world. But by Krishna's higher power, he kept them here. Just to help us always remember that death could come at any moment, whoever we are. It's not that snakes evaluate what caste you're in, or what your bank balance is, or how many followers you have, or how many people like you or don't like you. Snakes don't discriminate. But they're here. They're everywhere, in one form or another. The message was, see the challenges of this world from a higher perspective and offer respect to others. And that's basically the end of the story. And Suta Goswami tells like that. And then he ends that part of that narration of the story of Srimad Bhagavatam by telling Sonak Rishi and the sages of Naimasharanya that we are the eternal souls. We're not these material bodies or minds. The basic problem material existence is the misconception of I and mine. And then he concludes his teachings at this section of Bhagavatam by telling, when challenges and difficulties come, take shelter of Krishna. Don't disrespect anyone, even those who are causing you suffering. This is the way to take shelter of Krishna. That's how he concludes the story of Parikshit Maharaj. After that, Sonak Rishi starts asking other questions. Very interesting how the whole story of Srimad Bhagavatam concludes with that lesson. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the very personification of Srimad Bhagavatam, he gave us this verse, Trinadapi Sunichena Taror Ibasi Hishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. We should be more humble than grass, more tolerant than a tree. And if we study Srila Prabhupada's teachings, when he talks about tolerance, there's two ways he primarily describes titiksha or tolerance. One is resisting temptations that distract our life away from the regulative principles of Krishna consciousness or distract our consciousness away from Krishna. And two is to be forgiving. Amani namana dena. To be more tolerant than a tree. That means to forgive people. Even when they have hurt you. Even when they have betrayed you. It's not easy. Amani namana dena. Magnifying this principle that Suta Goswami concludes his teaching with. We should offer all respect to others, not expect in return. In this way we could chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. This brings us to today's conference, community. When we understand the basic principles we have just described, and we really dedicate our hearts to living by these principles, then everything becomes relatively easy. Beautiful trees with many fruits begin with little seeds. Today is New Year's Day. What does that mean? 2015 is gone forever. It's finished. Never to be seen again. At least in our lives. And 2016 begins today. 2016 is the 50th anniversary of Srila Prabhupada establishing the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. For every beginning, there is so much challenge, and then it enters into a new realm, just like birthday. From the Western perspective, birthday means when you come out of your mother's womb. Every single one of us had this experience. So that's the beginning of our life in one sense. From a deeper perspective, the beginning of this particular life is conception. But still, birthday is when we come out. That's the way we generally discuss it. But how much difficulty there was before that birthday. Many of the mothers, sometimes mothers don't have children for so many years, and they're crying and they're praying and they're doing pujas, and then finally a baby comes in their womb. Then they start getting sick, and so many difficulties and issues, and then labor pains, and then they're sometimes thinking, God, why was I praying for this? And it's not easy for the baby either, according to Kapila Dev. He describes what happens in the womb. The little baby goes through a lot in the womb of a mother. And then this pressure just pushes him through the mother. And babies never come out laughing. Any of our gynecologists, ever see a baby come out laughing? I don't know, but I assume they're either so stunned they don't make any sound, or if they make any sound, it's crying. So it's difficult. Happy birthday. So for every beginning, there's a lot of challenge and suffering for anything really to begin properly. So Srila Prabhupada, 50 years ago, he began ISKCON. That was a seed of a beginning. But he went through Jhansi, he got gored by a bull, and he was trying to sell back to Godheads in the heat in Delhi, and he went on Jaladutta and had heart attacks, and he lived in the Bowery in poverty, and he had death threats. So many people betrayed him that he gave his heart to. And after all that, he started ISKCON. The beginning. And it was from that beginning. And once things begin, it's not that the troubles and challenges go away. So many. And Srila Prabhupada expanded. And as he expanded, the whole society of ISKCON went into different levels of experience. The last few days, I've been spending most of the day reading the manuscript of Shamsundar Prabhu's new book, Chasing Rhinos with the Swami. And it's a long book, but it's really exciting and instructive. Because in those early days, everyone was with Prabhupada personally practically all the time. You know, there were just a few of them. But as things grew, and there were tens and thousands of devotees, at that time there was just about 25 people living in New York, and maybe about, there was six people living in San Francisco, and that was our movement. Prabhupada was writing letters to everyone practically, regularly, or meeting them. But later on, you know, when there were tens and thousands and over 100 centers, it was a very different situation. And each had their particular challenges. And that's just the nature of the world. There's a challenge at every stage. So our congregation that is assembled here, in one sense, Radha Gopinath Temple began with just a few brahmacharis, very, very tiny little congregation. But then it started growing. And we understood that devotees need personal care. And if everyone expects personal care from the same person, it's just not possible. The concept of a parampara of care. during Srila Prabhupada's life also. He expected us to have our problems solved and have our inspiration coming from him through others for 95% of the devotees. And for devotees to feel very direct shelter and experience through that being servant of the servant of the servant. So at a certain point we saw that the care of devotees, part of care of devotees is really making them feel cared for and valued. We decided to start this counselor system. And we began, I believe it was either 4 or 5 counselors. Srinati Prabhu, Krishnachandra Prabhu, Mahaprabhu Prabhu, Sahadev Prabhu, Radhakrishna Prabhu. They were the 5 counselors. And there was so much difficulty. Because no one wanted to go to their counselor. It was a challenge. It was really a challenge to get it going. And even when we got it going, it kept going slow or kind of stopped going. There had to be a huge amount of pressure to actually establish it. Now, many of you don't understand how much pressure it was. I do, because I was trying to make it happen, or at least on behalf of Srila Prabhupada. So there were serious challenges trying to get a counselor system with 5 counselors to work. But then somehow it started working. And then there were so many challenges about how to actually keep it going. But somehow or other, devotees surrendered, and devotees really tried their best. And because of that, things started expanding. And then Brahmachari Ashram was expanding, so we stuck this. So there was a counselor system established in the Brahmachari Ashram too. And soon, 5 counselors couldn't handle all the people coming. So it became 6. 7, 8, 9, 10. And then people started going other places and starting other centers in different areas, and congregations were growing. And then counselors, hundreds between all these different centers. And then we started a mentor system because the counselors couldn't deal with it. Problems. Most of you are mentors or counselors or something. There's 900 of you here. And you can't cope with it. So why am I saying this? Things are never going to be easy. There's always going to be challenges. But now that we're actually developing community, we shouldn't be discouraged or think, oh, if it only could be like the old days when nobody cared about Krishna consciousness except just a few of us. We should actually be happy with these problems, but we have to deal with them. Because as things develop, there's more of a need to really understand what is spiritual community. The challenges that are with us are necessary for our spiritual growth. Spiritual community, very simple in principle. That we have a common purpose. Because undoubtedly, there's going to be different kinds of people with different kinds of backgrounds, with different ways of talking and different types of acting. The concept of Varnashram Dharma is people with very different principles, with very different inclinations, very different ways of doing things, are all working together because they realize they're one body. Every part, every limb of the body works together with all other parts, even though they have very many differences. Every part of the body, the heart, the brain, the lungs, the kidneys, the hands, the legs, they all have their particular needs, but above their particular needs, they all put the need of the whole body. And the need of the whole body means they're all serving every other part. The health of a body is when every part is serving everyone else. And community means just that. Everyone sees the value and everyone understands this principle of unity and diversity. The unity is our common purpose. The example that is in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when you water the root of the tree, all parts of the tree are satisfied. The problem, whether it's devotees or non-devotees, when we're under the influence of material energy, we will not say this in a class, but we do have this inclination that I am the root of the tree. When I'm satisfied, everything will be nice. When the Bhagavatam tells that Krishna is the root of the tree, Bhagavad Gita, aham sarvasya prabhavam atta sarvam pravartate. To actually accept that Krishna is the root of the tree is really difficult. It's real easy to talk about. But what it means is to recognize, I'm just one of the leaves. It's not about me, it's about Krishna. And if every leaf of the tree thinks I'm the root, there'll be a lot of conflict. But to the degree every leaf recognizes that we're all dependent on the same root, that's when we all understand Krishna's in the center, then we have a community. And then we have our relationships based on that principle. And especially, we deal with the inevitable problems and challenges and sufferings that come with this understanding. And the concept of Guru Parampara is our Guru is teaching us how to keep Krishna in the center of our lives. If the Guru teaches something else, then a person is not actually a Guru. Srila Prabhupada named his society 50 years ago, in 1966, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Everything he was teaching, everything he exemplified was how to keep Krishna in the center. Which means to take ourselves out of the center. That is community. So how do we resolve challenges? This is the principle. What will please Krishna? we have to put the past into the past. Whatever has happened in the past, we have to learn our lessons from it. Whatever's happened in the, whatever may have been, it should evolve into the present in such a way that we are grateful for all the gifts that we have. And we forgive and move forward. What are so many of the problems that the world faces politically and even in religion? People are not willing to learn from the past and forgive and move forward. People just hold on to things. So in a community, people are going to step on each other. People are going to have, we have hurt others, others have hurt us. So we can just keep that always and try to somehow or other get revenge or have a hard heart. But that means we're not putting Krishna in the center. From the beginning to the end of Srimad Bhagavatam, forgiveness is not a detail. It is a main subject. Parikshit's son forgave Takshaka, who killed his father, for a higher principle. Parikshit Maharaj forgave Sringi, who cursed him to die. Prahlad Maharaj forgave Hiranyakashipu. Dhruva forgave Suruchi, his mother who broke his heart. Time and again, we learn this principle. They took the lesson, the wisdom, and moved forward. So this is what community is about. But doing it with Krishna in the center. Passing through the challenges of life, for individually and collectively we all grow. If difficult problems do not come in ways that really are not what we want, then we'll never really grow. But we don't have to worry about it, because that'll never happen. Those problems will come, because it's the material world. Krishna consciousness is about resolving challenges and problems with Krishna in the center. And collectively and individually growing through the process. To recognize the vital importance of the various ashrams, to really respect each other and work together, is so important. And whatever little success has happened through all of the different satellite centers, temples, or any other entity that's connected to Radha Gopinath Temple, it's all been on the basis of the cooperation between the householders and the renunciates. The respect, the value. The respect and value, even though there is a very fundamentally different mentality of living between the two. Unity and diversity. Srinathji Prabhu, Krishna Ram Prabhu, Krishna Chandra Prabhu, Radha Krishna Prabhu, Sahadev Prabhu, Mahaprabhu Prabhu, so many of these elder Grihasthas and many others. Brahmacharis who grew up in Radha Gopinath temple understood the unbelievable, incredible contribution that they're making. And empowered the Grihasthas in their Krishna consciousness by really appreciating the value of their contributions. And at the same time, those same Grihasthas really appreciated the Brahmacharis, who really didn't have much of anything except just the enthusiasm to inspire others. And when the Grihasthas appreciated the Brahmacharis, they really empowered because they saw the value in them. So householders, Brahmacharis, sannyasis, they're all empowering each other by recognizing the unity and diversity, the value, despite very different ways of thinking of things and doing things. The higher principle is to accommodate. It doesn't mean accommodating Maya. It means accommodating different ways, different people can contribute to the community and different views of how to be Krishna conscious. It's not a matter of siddhanta. It's a matter of nature. And if we want to bring new people in, whatever tiny little beginning they have, unless we appreciate and value that, then they'll never be able to actually overcome the big problems they have. That's the way Srila Prabhupada started. Wait till you read Shyamasundar Prabhu's book. The first chapter of his book, he gives graphic detail of what everyone was like in Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco when Prabhupada came. And what he was like. And what everybody else was like. And they were still like that when Prabhupada came. It's not that before Prabhupada got off the plane, they were all following the regular principles and they were all, you know, wearing tilak and had shaved heads and were. Nobody wore a dhoti. Nobody shaved their head. No women wore saris. They were all still smoking cigarettes and taking drugs and having girlfriends and boyfriends and you won't even believe what they were all doing. It's a beautiful book to read. You'll be shocked. You'll be shocked because I don't think any of you were like that. Because, you know, in India, maybe you were. Prabhupada came from Vrindavan into this scene. He could have just completely smashed everybody. That mantra rock dance that they had, Prabhupada was there. Every single person was on LSD and drunk with alcohol, and people were naked, and Prabhupada was giving a lecture to them. And then he started dancing in the kirtan and made them all dance. And afterward, the next day, he was so happy. Everyone was helping so much, and he was thanking the devotees who organized it, and some of the devotees who organized it, they weren't following any regulative principles. But Prabhupada was just seeing the good and seeing that they had some inclination. And through the process, giving them a sense of value within our movement, giving them a sense of value in their relationship with Krishna is what actually empowered them to give up all their vices, follow all the regulative principles. In the early days, Prabhupada was even giving initiation to people when they weren't following the principles. But after some time, they all did. Because it was small, Prabhupada was just, he was watering the seed. He wasn't watering the weeds. He was watering the seed. And he knew if he just kept watering the seed, the weeds would go away. And did. So he's our Acharya, our founder Acharya. So we have to have discipline and we have to have principles. But when we're bringing new people in, we have to understand Bhaktivedanta Hospital principle. That when people come to the hospital, it's not that you only let them in when they have perfect health. You deal with their diseases and bring them to perfect health. And even with devotees, we have to have our strict principles, but we have to apply them in such a way that we make people strong when they're weak, even among ourselves. Not that we make them feel completely rejected when they're weak. And this takes cooperation. So as our communities have been growing, ever new challenges are coming into our lives. And I'll be speaking tomorrow again, but I'd like to just end today's little introductory talk with a concept. If we can grasp this concept, we could really be instruments of Krishna's mercy. And that is to evaluate our own Krishna consciousness. We have our four regulative principles. We have our vows of sadhana to chant at least 16 rounds every day. We have our very important foundational sadhana of studying Srila Prabhupada's books carefully. Krishna consciousness, when we're actually making progress, we feel joy in seeing other people succeed. We feel joy in seeing other people empowered. There's a famous quotation. It's amazing how much you can accomplish if you're not concerned who gets the credit. It was not spoken by a devotee, but the principle is completely Krishna conscious. It was spoken by a little shop owner from a little town in one of the very unknown states of America, who became the president of the United States. He said, it's amazing how much you can accomplish if you're not concerned who gets the credit. That's from a material perspective. But this especially applies to what Srila Prabhupada taught us, to be the servant of the servant of the servant. When Balabhabhata came to visit Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Puri, Lord Chaitanya wanted to teach the whole world. And he was introducing each one of the devotees, and Lord Chaitanya was introducing every devotee to be better than him. He said, this is Ramananda Rai. Whatever I know about Radha and Krishna's intimate pastimes, I've learned from him. This is Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Whatever I've learned about the essence of Vedanta, I have learned from him. This is Haridas Thakur. Whatever I've learned about the glories of the holy name of the Lord, I learned from him. He was giving all credit for everything he had to everyone else. And we often cite Srila Prabhupada and his Vyas Puja just after the installation of Radha Gokulananda in London, where devotees from all over Europe and many from different parts of the world came to honor Prabhupada in his talk. He was glorifying each and every devotee about how important they were. And he was giving credit to them for his success. So this is really important. And we can test ourselves. How much are we really able to appreciate and value other people's devotional service? And the real test of our Krishna consciousness is how much we celebrate when somebody does even better than me. We may try to do better than them just so that more services, but there's no envy. There's joy. When we read Srila Prabhupada's books, the great Acharya's books, this is the common lesson always. Humility. Respect. You can't go any further in the higher rasas unless we really, really deeply, profoundly appreciate and live by the concept of humility and respect. And when we have this humility and respect, nothing can stop the progress of our communities. Because we'll deal with all of our problems and all of our challenges with that culture. So as we're chanting the holy names, as we're performing our pujas, we should really be praying. Srila Prabhupada gave us a definition of a leader. One who empowers others. And for this reason, we really feel that in all of our projects that are connected with us, we really want to see the brahmacharis, the grihastas, really working together, serving together, empowering each other, respecting each other. And grihastas with other grihastas and brahmacharis with other brahmacharis. It's not easy. Kali Yuga is an age of quarrel and hypocrisy. But it's the test of how sincere we actually are. And it is the formula by which true Krishna consciousness can grow in ourselves and can expand. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted this movement to be established in every town and village on the planet. That's not easy. So among all of you today, there's a few villages and cities that we represent. We have to really help each other to exemplify how it could be done in every town and village. Begins with us. Begins with devotees all over the world, wherever they may be. With every challenge, there is an incredible opportunity. An opportunity to surrender to Krishna and to inspire and empower incredible communities of devotees. Or opportunities to make offenses and fall down and create chaos. And everything in between. So we have come together for this pilgrimage to specifically address how we're going to meet the challenges before us. To please Srila Prabhupada. By pleasing Srila Prabhupada, we're watering the root of the tree. Because he's teaching us how to keep Krishna always in the center of our lives. Thank you very much. Would you like to ask questions? Madan Gopal Prabhu, you can call on the persons who you would like to ask the questions. You, in order to get your question, you have to attract the attention of Madan Gopal Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Can I ask? Can I ask? Okay.
You have been sanctioned.
It was very profound, Maharaj. I believe this will help all of us individually and collectively to upgrade our Krishna consciousness. In the way you are asking us to do. A particular devotee does a particular type of misbehavior which is not acceptable to the leadership or the people around who are concerned. There could be two different approaches to deal with the problem. One is punish him, because if you don't punish him, then the people around will not get the right message, because his wrongdoing will be condoned as an act of what is permissible. So there must be some disciplinary action. Punish him, of course, there's a sense of softness or discretion like that. Other is, no, if you punish him, it will discourage him. He'll get smashed, he will lose enthusiasm for bhakti, he will actually become demoralized. And so one is approach would be to protect the person. Other approach could be to protect the community around. Is getting affected by the person. So when I am part of discussions, I see this dichotomy always coming up. So I said, no, you know, we have to allow, we have to accommodate. You see, it is a growing experience. Somebody said, no, take action, because, you know, this is not good. He's damaging everybody else's Krishna consciousness, like that. So these two approaches often surface in our approach to dealing with a particular person or persons. What would the golden mean of doing things the right way?
That will always be there. And the more people we deal with, the more that will happen. Should we punish or should we accommodate? That is your question. We have to see every particular incident with a vision of the larger picture. Because the tendency of some people is just let it be. And the other people is, no, we have to take action because it's setting a bad principle and it's hurting others. These are both oftentimes immediate reactions. And as leaders, we have to really look at the whole larger picture of what has been done. What is best for that person? What is best to protect the whole community? We have to see it all. And then we make a decisive decision. And it's not always going to be the same in every situation. There has to be a balance. Punishment may be required for people to take things seriously. But it has to have a positive effect. So it is very important. Srila Prabhupada would sometimes take action against people for the protection of society. But at the same time, he always did it in a way that it would give that person, that it opened the doors for that person who to be rectified. And if the person doesn't want to be rectified, then if that person ever came to the conclusion, that door would be open for him or her. So there's no one answer to every situation. We really do have to see the whole situation. I don't think our word is so much punishment. The word punishment could mean so many things in people's minds. It's rectification. Rectification for the person and protection for the society. And for that, our leaders really do have to come together in certain situations, in certain places, to come up with the right balance between the two. By all means, we have to protect the innocent. But we should do it in such a way that our objective is fulfilled.
Energy
Just raise your hand and Madan Gopal Prabhu will call on you. He's calling on Srinathji Prabhu.
Your kind permission, Maharaj.
Can I disclose something which happened about 2 decades ago? One of our...
I'll decide on the permission after hearing what you're going to say.
Thank you, Maharaj. We had a theft at our... One group had gone to... Our large group had gone to Vrindavan. We found who was the thief. And the question was, what do we do with him? Throw him out from the congregation or rectify him? So finally, I think two of us, myself and it was Rishabhanu Prabhu, we agreed we'll rectify this person, the thief. Because he was actually a professional murderer before. And he came to murder one of our senior colleagues of mine. So we had to rectify him and make him a devotee. So we decided that we insist that he go to Prabhupada Samadhi, we were in Vrindavan, and we would chant with him 64 rounds of the Mahamantra non-stop. Today he's a very nice devotee.
You have my permission.
Maharaj, this question is in connection with the point you are making that brahmacharis and grihasthas need to respect and value each other. So I'm just taking this question to one level before, especially in the context of preaching to youth, you know, in colleges, etc. Because as the youth are coming in, you know, they have to make this decision. I mean, they are always thinking about whether they should become a brahmachari or a grihastha. You know, that's one thing that's very important. So obviously, many times it may happen that the brahmachari, the preachers or the mentors, you know, they may feel that it would be good for if a particular youth is ready to dedicate his life, you know, as a brahmachari and completely give himself, which in many ways was what Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada also felt, you know, about young boys, it would be good, you know, so they may encourage them in that direction sometimes. But then sometimes it also happens that those youth who may not be so suitable, you know, to be a brahmachari, they may feel a little bit discouraged or demotivated in that process of, because it is not known before itself to the preacher, obviously a new young boy, would he actually best fit as a brahmachari or a grihastha? It's not really known, only time will tell that. So in that process, this you know, difficulty is there. So, you know, how to address this in a way that those who would naturally tend to become a brahmachari, a sadhu, you know, becomes naturally inspired in that direction, and at the same time, those who would actually best serve in the grihastha order, you know, they would also not feel demotivated and they take it nicely. How to balance?
Our purpose is to help people become Krishna conscious. One can be Krishna conscious as a grihastha, one can be Krishna conscious as a brahmachari. And we should not discourage people. We should encourage people. And in my own experience, because different people have different ways of doing things, in my own experience, we should simply be trying to convince people to be Krishna conscious. And if they naturally have a very, very strong desire to be a grihastha, or they have a strong desire to be a brahmachari, and they and they truly have the capacity to pursue that life, then we encourage them. But everyone should be encouraged. Because brahmachari life is culminates either in a person getting really good training and then becoming a grihastha. That's perfection of brahmachari. Or they really are really happy and they're really well settled in this type of life and they pursue as brahmachari. Either one is perfect. That's within the ashram. So our emphasis really should be to help people become Krishna conscious. And according to their gunas and their karmas and their inspiration and their capacity also. It's not that the capacity of one person to be a brahmachari and the capacity of another person not to be a brahmachari has necessarily anything to do with their Krishna consciousness. Because many of our very, very most advanced and realized devotees are grihasthas too, and brahmacharis also. I see equally we have both. And both brahmacharis and grihasthas in many ways are equally spreading our movement. So we have to empower and encourage everybody according to their natures. According to their natures and according what they could do well. If one is not happy as a brahmachari for durations of time, then it's artificial to remain in that situation. It's better if they become grihasthas. It's unsustainable. If a person has a nature toward grihastha life, and they really put Krishna in the center, they're as good as a brahmachari. If a brahmachari really is well-situated, happy, challenges will be there, stresses will be there, no matter what you are, but they're actually thriving and satisfied with that, then that's a sign that they really are doing well as brahmacharis. They could remain as brahmacharis. So it's not a matter of if we fall down from the regulative principles, that's a fall down. But the particular ashram we are accepting, if a brahmachari decides to be a grihastha with honor and respect, that's not a fall down in any way. For a brahmachari to remain a brahmachari with that consciousness of satisfied with that ashram and productive in that ashram, that's a great success. For a brahmachari to enter the grihastha ashram with dignity and integrity, that's a great success too. So we have to understand that principle. And we're trying to get people to understand the essence, which is to be Krishna conscious. And according to their nature, according to how they can best serve, we encourage them that way. Is there any ladies who have questions? Sri Dhamma, you could call on the ladies.
Yes.
See, we have Brahmachari Grihastha, they're both doing service. But Madan Gopal cannot do Sri Dhamma Prabhu is doing. Sri Dhamma cannot do Madan Gopal Prabhu is doing. So this is community. Yes.
Maharaj, when we speak of rectifying devotees, generally we think that when we make the truth palatable, that means we may modify the truth, not really modify, but bring down the facts and express in a way to the devotee so that it is palatable for the devotee to understand the situation and maybe come to a point of rectification. Whereas on the other hand, we may have an option of putting the facts as they are, so that the facts are driven through and the person understands. So of the two strategies, I mean, are we supposed to decide what will suit the devotee, or should we take the better path of speaking truth palatably?
Taking everything into consideration, the person, the community, we should do what is best, what works best. Srila Prabhupada, sometimes he would chastise people like a lion. Yes? And other times he would, people who were making mistakes, he would, like a loving mother. And Prabhupada said a preacher, like a British soldier, courage, or like a Bengali mother. Which one works? That's the question. Which is going to have the result? When Srila Prabhupada would chastise people, it wasn't a punishment. It rectified them. And he could be very strong and very heavy, but it rectified them. So how to deal with particular situations? The material world always puts us in very complicated, difficult decisions to make. Especially with human behavior. That's one of the challenges we're talking about. We have to be humble. At the same time, we have to be decisive. We have to have some wisdom. Wisdom means to see the larger picture. What's happened in the past, how we deal with it in the present, should be what's best for the future, for the person and for the community.